This is Ed Driscoll, and we're speaking with Tebby Troy, visiting senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and deputy secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services from 2007 until 2009, who has a lengthy article in the April issue of Commentary Magazine titled Healthcare, a Two-Decade Blunder. And Tebby, thanks for stopping by PJ on Political.
Great. Thanks for having me, and I hope you would call it a lengthy and interesting article.
It was a very interesting article. But let's go back a bit before the period in which it actually covers. Tebby, progressivism in both Europe and America has had a long, long history of wanting to, depending upon what word you want to use, collectivize, socialize, basically have state-run healthcare. And I think I've read this goes back to the days of Otto von Bismarck in the late 19th century.
It's true. Bismarck did see that as a sort of political mechanism for maintaining his hold on the state so that he could engage in his foreign policy with a little more latitude and freedom. You know, make the people happy by giving them health care, and then he could pursue his Blutenisen, or his blood and iron foreign policy.
And then fast forward to the mid-20th century, where Canada and Germany passed their systems to provide socialized medicine after World War II.
Yeah. There was just a sort of an expansion of the administrative state after World War II, in the U.S. as well. I mean, they didn't pass a sweeping healthcare reform, but a lot of the impetus for expanded healthcare coverage came in the U.S. after World War II. A number of historians have written about this. What happened was you had all these farm boys, city boys, people on reservations. I mean, people who had never had experience with regular healthcare, and they go to the U.S. Army or whatever aspect of the U.S. military, and suddenly they have free healthcare, and every kind of need is taken care of by the good doctors in the U.S. military. And then they go back to wherever they're from, and they're saying, "Hey, where's the healthcare?" And there's sort of a feeling that more people needed more care, and that was one of the things that kind of widened the perception that people need more expensive healthcare. This kind of reached a head in the Great Society when we basically came up with the what I call the current, or until the Obama bill passed, the current equilibrium, where we said that we as a society are going to cover poor people, which we do through Medicaid, and kids through SCHIP, and we're going to cover older people, which we do through Medicare. But for the most part, other people would be responsible for getting their own health insurance, and they would do so through the employer-provided system, and we set up tax incentives to make that more likely to happen.
During the late 1970s through the late 1980s, healthcare sort of fell off the radar screen as a big hot-button issue. What happened in the early 1990s to resurrect it?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, in the period after World War II and leading up into the 70s and 80s, we had, for the most part, high employment and low unemployment. There were some exceptions, of course. And also, we had most people working for one company and sticking with that company throughout their careers. So you start with a company, let's say it's GM at age 22, and you stick with that career with that company for your whole career, and that's where you get your health care the whole time, and you don't really think about it. In the late 80s, you started to see a lot more flexibility in the labor force. More people started working for themselves. The fax machine and the beginnings of cell phones gave people a little more flexibility to work for themselves or to start smaller businesses. The Reagan Revolution also probably helped by freeing up the economy a bit. And you also had some costs. You started to realize the increasing costs based on the expansion of the third-party payer system with the creation of Medicare and Medicaid in the mid-60s. I mean, people argued in this latest round that, having more people covered by the government will lower costs. But what we've actually seen is that costs have gone up since the government has had a greater role in healthcare since the creation of Medicare and Medicaid. So increased costs, more labor market flexibility, and more concerns about people being able to carry their health care from one employer to another were some of the things that led to this nervousness about health care that I write about in the article in the late 1980s.
Tebby, your article mentioned a name that, frankly, I had forgotten about until I read your piece in Commentary. Could you talk a bit about who Harris Wofford is and why such an otherwise obscure politician was such a bellwether of radical change?
Yeah. That's a good question. And a lot of people have said to me after reading this article, I forgot about Harris Wofford. Harris Wofford was a Kennedy aide, John F. Kennedy aide in the early 1960s. He was director of the Peace Corps. And he became a head of a university in Pennsylvania. And he kind of started this quixotic quest for a Senate seat in 1991 in Pennsylvania after John Hines, who was the longstanding senator from Pennsylvania and the husband of Teresa Hines, now Teresa Hines Kerry, he died in a plane crash. Senator Hines died in a plane crash. They have a special election. There's a guy named Dick Thornburgh, who is the U.S. Attorney General and a two-time governor of Pennsylvania. He steps in to the race, and he scares everybody off, and everybody says, well, this is going to be Thornburgh's seat, especially at the time Pennsylvania was seen as a much more Republican state than it is now. And so Thornburgh enters the race, and this guy Harris Wofford says, well, I'm going to run too. And everybody said, ridiculous, he has no chance, he has no name recognition, who is he? Thornburgh has, this is Thornburgh's race. And Wofford hired a very smart but unknown political consultant named James Carville, and Carville said, we're going to make this race about health care. And Wofford pushed the health care issue over and over and over again in the campaign and in the debate with Thornburgh. He held up a copy of the Constitution. He says, the Constitution says everybody is entitled to a lawyer. Well, why isn't everybody entitled to a doctor? And this wasn't exactly an argument that you heard in the Federalist Papers, if you will.
Right.
And Thornburgh, who's a very well-respected attorney, constitutional expert, he really didn't know what to make of it. And they were advised by their political people, you know what, just don't respond on this. Say, who's going to pay for it, but don't come up with your own plan. And by not coming up with his own plan, he left himself vulnerable to this attack because he didn't really stand for anything on the health care issue. And Wofford defeated him, and everybody said, this is the bellwether. This means health care is the big issue, the hot issue. And James Carville was catapulted to fame and became the political consultant for Bill Clinton and helped him win the 1992 race against George H.W. Bush, again, whom was someone that everybody thought was going to win re-election after he had 90% approval ratings after the Gulf War. And he also lost, and people attributed that to health care, even though that was not necessarily the cause of his loss.
Well, speaking of losses, the Democrats of 2010 were convinced that their predecessors in 1994 lost because they didn't pass Hillary Care. Obamacare has passed, but at least based on current poll numbers, it doesn't sound like it will be quite the barn burner at election time for Democrats.
Yeah, this is a great debate among Democrats. You know, did they lose in 94 because they proposed this expansive health care or because they didn't get it passed? And I would argue it's because they proposed an unpopular and expansive health care reform. And so similarly, the Democrats now, as we're seeing, are in terrible shape. I think Michael Barone, who's one of the best political watchers out there, said that he's never seen the Democratic Party in more trouble than in his lifetime. And I think it's because they tried to force an unpopular bill down the American people's throats. And this is based in part on this whole hangover from Wofford, when people think that pushing universal health care is the key issue that will bring the Democrats to power and keep them in power. And I'm not sure that's the case, and I don't think history suggests that it's the case.
Now, Republicans have also attempted their own modifications of America's health care system. Your article mentioned President Bush's Medicare prescription drug program from 2003.
Yeah, President Bush said, look, we Republicans are vulnerable on health care. That doesn't mean that the Democrats are right to push a universal system, and that it doesn't mean that the universal system is popular with the American people, but we need to show some credibility on the health care issue. And he pushed for a more targeted reform. He said there's a hole in Medicare. The hole in Medicare is the fact that it did not, as of 2003, provide prescription drug benefits for inpatients, for outpatients. So if you're in a hospital, which is much more expensive, you can get prescription drugs paid for under Medicare. But if you're out of a hospital, just visiting your doctor, you would not have those prescription drugs covered under Medicare. And that was based on 1965 medicine and didn't really recognize how important prescription drugs are to kind of the daily standard, daily regimen of care today when you have cholesterol-lowering drugs, for example, that people take every single day that extends lives. So President Bush said, well, we need to have some kind of prescription drug benefit under Medicare. We Republicans will be vulnerable if we don't pursue something along these lines. And I want to push something that has market-based reforms, that gives people choice within the Medicare system, which is kind of a no-no within the Medicare system that hadn't existed before. And he did it. People said, oh, there's no way old people will look up online and figure out what best plan works for them. But we find that 90% of people in Medicare chose something other than the standard government alternative within the Medicare prescription drug program, which means they went online, they looked at what their options were, and they chose what was best for them.
This is Ed Driscoll, and you're listening to PajamasMedia.com's PJM Political on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's POTUS channel. We're talking with Tevi Troy, former Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services from 2007 until 2009. Tevi, as you mentioned in your article and commentary this month, obviously the U.S. healthcare system, even before the passage of Obamacare, has its flaws. What would a more responsible and responsive healthcare reform look like?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think the answer to the question might be a little different now that the President Obama's healthcare reform passed, because it'll be harder to do some of the things that I was suggesting. But I would like to see an expansion of HSAs, which are health savings accounts, which allow you to save tax-free for your healthcare costs, but you do it in conjunction with a high-deductible catastrophic plan. That means you're paying out of pocket for more costs, but you're saving tax-free for it. You don't have to pay for as expensive a plan if you're sort of a young and healthy person, and those are some of the people who don't want to purchase health care these days because it's so expensive. And it allows people to use market forces, the power of consumerism, to make choices and to actually bring down costs, because we've seen that consumerism actually brings down costs in every area of the economy. I mean, you look at cellular phones and televisions and computers. In every one of those areas, quality is getting better and costs are getting lower. In medicine, that does not seem to be the case. The only exception I can think of in medicine is something like LASIK surgery, in which the quality has gotten better, the costs have gotten lower, but that is something that is traditionally not paid for by government or by insurance. So it's not within the traditional third-party payer system. It's because people are going out there shopping for the best LASIK surgery options and driving down the costs themselves by using market forces.
Tevi, your article mentions Scott Brown as a sort of bookend to Harris Wofford in the early 1990s.
Yeah, I guess 19 years after the Wofford race, you again had a little-known guy named Scott Brown who was running for Senate in a special election after a well-known senator, Senator Kennedy, passed away. And everybody thought this was Coakley's race, and Scott Brown hammered on the health care issue, except he was saying, let's not do this thing, let's not pass this bill. And the people of Massachusetts, which is a very liberal state, voted for him because they wanted him to be the 40th vote blocking the Democrats from getting their health care reform. Now, obviously, the Democrats still had enough votes to push something through. They did a couple of shenanigans, and they were able to pass the bill. But that doesn't make it more popular, and that doesn't mean they're right on the politics of the issue.
So how will all this play out, both in the run-up to November and in the coming years?
Well, I think running up to November, the Democrats are going to experience some pain. I mean, they're going to lose a bunch of seats in the House and in the Senate. The one thing they have going for them is the structural advantage, that there are so few potentially vulnerable Democratic seats up this year in the Senate elections that there's almost no chance of them losing the Senate by a wide margin. And a lot of things would have to play right for the Republicans, for the Democrats even to lose the Senate at all. But I think that this bill is unpopular. I think the costs are going to be higher than President Obama has led people to believe. I think there are going to be fewer people covered than the Democrats have led people to believe. In fact, there have been these articles about people calling up insurance companies and saying, I want my free President Obama health care. Where is it? And it's not available. It's not going to be available for years, and it's only going to be available to a very few people. And for the other people, you're going to see costs going up. So as the costs go up and people realize that not that many people are actually getting health care from this bill, and as our debt increases, I think it's going to be a tougher and tougher issue for the Democrats and a tougher and tougher plan for them to defend.
This is Ed Driscoll, and we've been speaking with Tevi Troy, visiting senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and deputy secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services from 2007 until 2009, who has a lengthy and definitely very interesting article in the April issue of Commentary Magazine titled Healthcare, a Two-Decade Blunder. And Tevi, thanks once again for stopping by PajamasMedia.com's PJM Political.